The world is understood to be incomplete and a broken place. Therefore, each person is expected to help with the healing of the world. It's called Tikkun Haloam. I hope I got that right. Or close. It's the work of each of us. With the gifts that we're born with, and with the skills that we learn along the way, it is our work towards this healing, towards a just world, a healthy world that includes every single person. This is the sixth principle that I spoke about earlier, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Perhaps an unachievable ideal, but it's the small steps that make the biggest difference. It is one person saying, I can change this one thing, and so I will. Part of what our purpose is in life, if we are fortunate enough to discover it, is to find that one thing that we can do to help heal this world. It's an unanswerable mystery why one person is born in British Columbia, one of the most peaceful places in the world, and why another one is born halfway around the world on a different continent in a smaller country called Sierra Leone. One person growing up in privilege and peace, and I am thinking of myself, but it could be any of us in this room here. And another growing up in challenging situations of poverty and violence. And it's another whole other kind of mystery why we ended up in this room together this morning. I met Fasine about, 8 years ago, crazy, when he was going to the Vancouver Film School, and I was working there as one of the acting teachers. Now, the work of the rehearsal room is challenging. It requires great courage because it demands great risk. So I participated in these moments with Fasine and watched his courage as he took his risks, which were quite extraordinary, and I witnessed his strength, which is incredible, and his vulnerability, which is very deep and wide, and his beautiful, caring heart. And I don't want to embarrass you, but this is my truth. And it is a privilege that finally these two worlds of mine, the acting world and the ministry world, come together this morning, and I get to introduce you to Fasine and Ava, who I met more recently through the work they do together. And I will not say any more about it. I will leave the story to you two. So Fasine and Ava.
Hello everyone, thanks so much for having us here today. My name is Ava Vanderstarman.
And I'm Fasine Keita. We're the founders of Innocence Loss Foundation.
So we're here today to share with you a little bit about child soldiers. And we started a charity called Innocence Loss Foundation, and it's for child soldier rehabilitation and healing. And Fasine is going to share with you a little of his story. He was a child soldier in the Sierra Leone Civil War in the 1990s. So what is a child soldier? It's anyone under the age of 18 that's used in an armed group or a force. And there's estimated to still be up to 300,000 child soldiers used worldwide, many of which are girls that people may not know.
Children can be used in the front lines, in active combat, and sometimes they can be used as cooks, servants, and some girls as well as some boys are used as sex slaves. And in some countries around the world, children are indoctrinated and used as suicide bombers, and sometimes they use as human shield. They place them in the most exposed positions to protect the senior members of the group, so these kids end up getting killed in most of the cases while these senior members get away.
And this still happens around the world. Here's a map of some countries where children are still used as soldiers to this day and right now. So Fasnay is going to share with you a little bit about where he's from and his story and the risks he took to coming to Canada.
I was born in Sierra Leone. It's on the west coast of Africa. The land was inhabited for over 2,000 years before freed slaves discovered the capital city. They brought free slaves back, and they called it Freetown as a monument for freedom. I was born in Kabbalah, which is the north of the country, right up on the top there, like more kind of like BC in the mountains. Like when I came to Canada, I was in Alberta. I was missing home more, but when I came to BC because of the mountain, I felt a lot at home. I lived in Kabbalah till I was 5 years old. My mom couldn't afford to continue to pay for my education, so she sent me away to go stay with my uncle in a different town called Tonga Field. So I arrived in Tonga Field. I started school with my uncle, and then the war got escalated. The war was started by a guy named Fode Sanko. That guy, after we gained independence from Britain in 1961, the country was governed by dictators who mismanaged the natural resources, the diamond, the bauxite, the rutile. And if you've seen Blood Diamond, the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, it's about Sierra Leone, that war. So when he started the war, he said he's going to bring free education because our educational facility infrastructure was all destroyed because the government wasn't taking care of it. So he said he's going to bring free education, he's going to build roads, he's going to bring free human rights, he's going to watch out for the country and protect the natural resources. But when, as the war escalated, people realized it was worse than the government. They were just saying those things to recruit people. So people stopped fighting for him because he was killing people and stealing all the natural resources. So his group was the rebel fighting the soldiers. So while I was living in Tonga Field with my uncle, when I was 9 years old, they attacked the town. Because what happened was when people realized he was just a liar, like most of them are, just trying to exploit the people, when people stopped fighting for him, he changed his strategy. So he would attack the town, kidnap all the kids, and use them, train them to go capture another town and kidnap more kids and train them so he can enlarge his army. So I was taken when I was 9 years old. They took me to the camp, and it was like a week training, so it wasn't like conventional army where it's like months and years. It was just 1 week. They teach us how to dismantle an AK-47, put it back together, and then they expect you to learn the rest as you go in battle. So when I started fighting for them, I didn't want to be part of it because I was fortunate to have a grandmother who believed in God. And she scared me to death when I was a kid that stuff like killing people and stuff like that, you end up in hell, and that really scared me. So when I was with the RAF, I was like, I have to get out. But it was a risk, because if they catch me escaping, they will kill me. And even if I escape and go to the soldier side, the government side, if they capture me and find out that I was with the RAF, they will kill me. So I was in this dilemma, I didn't know what to do. So one day we capture a town, we don't get paid, we have a thing called Operation Pay Yourself. You capture a town, you take everything, it's yours, Operation Pay Yourself, because we don't get paid. So we go through the houses looking for stuff, and then I saw the people who used to live in the house, they just ran away and left their stuff on the ground. And I saw school uniform that fits me, so I took it and put it in my backpack. So when I was alone, I escaped. And when I escaped, I took away the shaggy military pants I was wearing and put on the school uniform and went to the military checkpoint. So when I arrived at the military checkpoint with my school uniform, they were still suspicious. They're like, are you IRF? Are you a rebel? I'm like, no, I was on my way to school. They attacked the town and then I ran. So after searching me over and over, they let me through. So So I went back, I hitched a ride to the town where I was because the soldiers had taken the town. But my uncle wasn't in town anymore and I didn't have anyone to take care of me. So I found myself in this situation. I don't have a place to live, I don't have food to eat. And most of my friends that we used to play together are like the new bosses in town because they've all joined the army. They're like the new sheriffs in town. My best friend Bobby, he wasn't even that strong. I used to beat him up when we used to fight. And all of a sudden, he's like the main police scary guy in town. So I started following him around because I needed food and he had abundance of that because he was just taking it. So he took me to the headquarters and said, you can join the army and have a way of living and have a place to sleep, or you can go out there and be a civilian and suffer. So I joined the army until things started getting back to business, and then my uncle came to town. I had to escape the army again and went to my uncle and continued school. So during the war, you have places during the war, you have times when the East is in turmoil, but the West is not. So if I'm in the East, I would join a fighting force because unfortunately, civilians are the most likely to be killed in those wars. So I would join it, and if I can escape, I escape and go to the West. So during my whole childhood, I was always moving from one place to another. And when the war ended, I didn't know what to do. I was like happy the war has ended, but at the same time, it's like I didn't even have my basic full schooling and education. So it was like, what am I gonna do with my life? And then that slow confusion and depression started setting in because the whole country was in ruin, houses had been burned, and I knew it would take years to get that developed. So I found someone from Canada that was trying to bring me to Canada, but it didn't work out. Because apparently after 9/11, it got really, really tough to travel from anywhere around the world to come to the West. So somebody told me about the internet. It's like, there's this thing called, because then the internet is just starting to grab hold in Africa. It's like this thing called the internet. It's like a TV. You go sit on it and you write anything you want to see and it will show you. I was like, that's not possible. It's like, yeah, it is possible. So I went to the internet cafe. We had only one internet cafe. You pay for 30 minutes, you sit. And then when I sat on it, the first thing I researched, because then they had Yahoo search was the main search engine then. The first thing I researched was corruption in Sierra Leone government. And then I had a list. They have UN and other humanitarian organizations that are keeping track of the corruption in African governments. So I wrote that down, because that was my biggest problem, because I know the reason why the country isn't going anywhere is because of the corruption. So I wrote it down on a piece of paper, and then I have this list, I didn't know what to do with it. And then I slowly started turning it into music, trying to divide it, make a song out of it. And then I took the little money I had, I risked it, and then I went to the studio and recorded me a music album. So when I recorded the album, I took it to the DJs. The first DJ I gave it to, he listened to it, and he's like, there's no way I'm gonna play that. It's like, I got kids, and you don't understand what it is to have kids and have this kind of stuff running behind you. So I later found some DJ, his name was DJ Bass, and he's a Rasta man. I hated the corrupt politician, but he hated them more than I do. So when I gave him my CD, he listened to it. He said, yes, this is what I've been waiting for. I'm ready to take the heat. Are you ready to take the heat? And then he played it. And it was so, nobody had done that before, faced the government. And the reason why, because he had, after we got peace, we had a UN TV, a radio station that the UN gave us, so you can play anything you want on it. And as long as you can deal with the consequences, that's on you. So he played the song, and then all of a sudden it spread all over the country like wildfire. And then I started getting text messages like, I'm with the government, we know where you are. You're right now in the East, and I'll be like in the West. And be like, yeah, I'm in the East, yeah, come get me. So I was just moving from place to place. So I decided, well, since I've attempted to come to Canada once, it didn't work out. maybe if I go back to the consul, the Canadian consul, and tell them that all I did was a song, and my government is trying to get me, maybe they'll take me out. So I took it and went back to the Canadian consul and brought newspaper clipping and my song. So they're like, okay, we'll look into it and we'll bring up your case. So they brought up my case, and luckily in 3 months I was able to get out of Africa. And then I came to Canada. And I arrived in Canada in June in Calgary. And when I arrived in Canada, it was in June, and I got out of the plane and I thought it was really, really cold. So I put on my jacket and my toque. And my friends who came to pick me up were like, why are you wearing this big jacket and toque? I'm like, because I'm cold. Like, oh my God. You have no idea what you're in for. And then winter came, and then I understood what they were talking about. The first time it snowed, I didn't go to work, I called in sick. And my boss was like, yeah, we knew that was gonna happen. We knew when you see snow, you're not gonna come to work. But I worked in the oil field, and I wasn't happy. Because I wanted to pursue movies, I wanted to continue pursuing music, because I want to tell story. Because one thing people don't know, storytelling is really, really powerful. It's more powerful than shooting guns. Because that government that I released that album against when I came here, the election happened, they lost the election. So that's how powerful music can be. And I wanted to come to film school, but I didn't have the money to come to film school. So I was like, if this is a risk I have to take, I gotta go. I can't keep staying here because I'm not feeling like my life is being fulfilled. So I worked in the oil field for a little bit, and I got a little bit of money to come to school for 4 months. But I wanted to do the 1 year 4 months, but I have enough money to pay for my schooling for 4 months and living an allowance for 4 months, and that's that. And I was like, well, I'm gonna take the risk and go to school and see what will happen. So I moved from Alberta and came to BC, and the first thing I realized about Vancouver, it was like it doesn't snow all the time in winter. I was like, okay, well, that's it with Alberta. I'm not going back there. So I went to school, and then all of a sudden, I didn't know what I was in for, because like, now I have to face understanding myself. Because growing up in war, you push everything in the back. You don't want to talk about it, because you see people who are worse off than you. And then all of a sudden, I have these exercises with Deborah and other people, and like, you have a right about stuff in your life, and like, I'm facing the mirror, and it was really, really scary. And at first, I was really, really stubborn. But then like, people like Deborah, the thing is like, when she wants you to do something, you're gonna do it. But at the same time, like for me, like the reason why I was doing it, because I would go home and be like, oh, she doesn't even know, why would I want to get in there? And then at the same time, like, oh, you know she means well though. I'm like, yeah, I know. Okay, and then I would do it. So I started writing about my past, dealing with my stuff. And then by the time I was done school, I was able to forgive myself, because I blame myself a lot, like just like when divorce happened in a family, kids blame themselves. That's the same way people like us when we were kids, when we were using the war, all the things you do, you blame yourself for it. You're like, I shouldn't have done that. But I remember there was this exercise in school where you put an empty chair in front of you and you sit, and then you put someone in the chair and say what you want to say to them. So I put people that I was angry at on that chair, and then one day I've imagined myself as a little kid and put myself on that chair. And for the really first time, I saw myself as that kid who got caught up in a war that he didn't start. He has nothing to do with it. And he has to do whatever he has to do to survive. And that's how my healing process started. And then I finally met Eva in school. And then we started Innocence Loss Foundation. To rehabilitate child soldiers and bring support to people like that who went through whatever.
So the war in Sierra Leone has been over since 2002, and it is now a safe place, but a lot of children that were used as soldiers missed out on their education and opportunities and are suffering from a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma. So we wanted to do something to end child soldiering, and Fascinate and I came together, and in 2013 we created a nonprofit foundation called Innocence Lost Foundation. And in 2013 I was Miss British Columbia, and my platform at the time was rehabilitation of child soldiers, and it was inspired by Fascinate's story. So we took a risk and started our own organization because we wanted to be in control of where the money goes, the finances, and which projects we do. So we created the organization, and we're working towards building a community center in Kabala, which is Fascinate's old hometown in Sierra Leone. And we became a registered Canadian charity in 2016. So we're working towards this. The programs we're going to offer is education programs to former child soldiers who missed out on school, skills training programs, and therapy programs. We're also going to have a medical clinic and a water well for the community. And then I just have some photos to show you. This is of our volunteers. We have a great group of volunteers that have been helping us. We're all volunteers in the organization, and we also have sponsors that cover the costs of all the administration costs of running the organization, so that we can put all money that we raise towards this project. And here's just some more images of that. We've raised $95,000 so far out of our $200,000 goal. And this is a concert. We do an annual concert called Trading a Gun for a Guitar, and that was in the fall. And what else do we have here? We sell jewelry. All of our volunteers get together, we make jewelry, and all the money raised goes to the project. We also have t-shirts, and we speak at schools around the Lower Mainland. We also did a Skype presentation with a school in the U.S. In 2017.
Yeah, and I remember when we did that, they invited us online, and like, oh, come speak to our school. And then all of a sudden, she went online and found out something about some racist kid in school went to other black kids' locker and put some bad racist stuff. And I remember when she told me about it, I saw it and I was so angry. I'm like, I'm not going to speak there at 4 that night. And she's like, well, maybe sleep on it. I'm like, yeah, but I'm so angry. How can they be so racist? And then by the next morning, I realized that, you know, I'm doing the same thing that I don't want them to do, like use one example to label a whole group of people, a whole school. So I felt a little bit ashamed, but I didn't say it. I'm like, okay, well, maybe we should talk to the school. So we talked to the school, and I met so many amazing people out there. And that just goes to say, like, it's done every day. Like, one person do bad, we automatically assume everyone in that community is wrong. But that's what I learned from that, that you can't, because of one bad thing, you can't label a whole group.
So here's like some projects the students have done. Some of the schools we spoke at created fundraisers and clubs and things like that. So we're getting youth involved in it, and a talent show that they put on as well. So we just wanted to share that with you. If you have any questions or anything like that, you can come up to us. We have some brochures or business cards with us if you're interested in learning more. And we just want to let you know that if this is something that's close to your heart, you can reach out to us. That's our email address and our website. So thank you so much for having us here today. We're really happy to share with you a little bit about our goals and what we're working towards for rehabilitation and healing of former child soldiers.
Thank you.